Hello and welcome to a special Club by Club 2019 review edition.
They're all special editions.
of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson and Charlie O'Connor Clark with you again this week. And we're going, as I mentioned, team by team to review the 2019 season from our boots on the ground, from our journalists and our contributors in each market. It may be good if you're a Halifax Wanderers fan in a way, because we're going to start with you. By the way, we're going to put the time codes for each club in the description because we're going to start with the Wanderers at the very bottom.
So if you don't really want to hear us talk that much, you can skip ahead to your club.
Exactly, yeah. And then we're going to end with Forge FC. So Forge FC fans, you can, again, check the description to see the chat that corresponds with your club. We've had these conversations already, Charlie, so we're recording this after. But what was one big takeaway from talking to our reporters that you really, really liked?
See, I think that something that stands out to me is pretty much all of our reporters have just come out and said that they're impressed with how much their cities have embraced their clubs this season.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
A lot of what we're hearing from everywhere is that just aside from the play on the pitch, like the supporters have really made every club this year, and that's been really interesting to hear from, as you said, our boots on the ground.
Sandra Priscina for Cavalry, she had a good couple thoughts about that, especially hearing about what's happening around Spruce Meadows and Jonathan Briggins in Halifax as well. We're obviously going to get to him as well. I really liked the insight from Martin Bauman at Pacific FC, just talking about some of the young players that are coming through, and and also some very honest conversations about some of the veterans on that team and whether or not they're going to be able to do it again in 2020.
And then we've also got a really interesting perspective on Tristan Borde's future from Arcadio Marcuzzi, our French language contributor at campiel.ca. So
yeah, keep that in mind. And we've also got James Grossi for York 9 FC and then Steven Sandor for FC Edmonton. Actually, before we get into this, we should talk about the fan awards. Download the app if you haven't already. Sign up. And you can vote for three things. You can vote for a goal of the year, save of the year, and then also team of the year. So team of the year is interesting. You're going sort of player by player. There's two for each position. So you're looking at the Marco Carducci's versus Nathan Ingham, Buescher versus Becker, that sort of thing. Classic rivalries we've seen in the Canadian Premier League in 2019. So download Center Circle and get on voting, because it's going to wrap up here in the middle of the week, I believe on the 15th, so you don't have a whole lot of time, and then winners will be announced the day after on the 16th. So get on, vote for those, and all right, want to get into it?
Yeah.
And we're kicking things off here out east with Halifax Wanderers and Jonathan Briggins. Jonathan, how are you?
Good.
How's the weather out there?
It's 2 degrees, kind of nice. Not too cold, not too warm. Just right in the middle.
Not bad, yeah. We were just mentioning Armin's not here because the weather was too poor in Toronto. I'm sure you've already heard that out there.
But now it's like exactly what you just described. It's like the same as it is in Halifax.
That's true. So we're starting obviously with the Wanderers because they finished in last place with 28 points over the two seasons. I guess let's just start with your initial thoughts about the seasons, Jonathan. You watched quite a number of home games, and what's your big takeaway from this group specifically for the Wanderers?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you only went to games in Halifax, you would think they're a pretty okay team. It's weird that we had such a huge split between home and road. It was two complete different teams every home game, except for a couple of losses to Cavalry there. Like, they were in pretty much every game. So I think overall, last place feels a little bit harsh, but the reality is when you can't score on the road or win games until the last game of the season, it's hard to finish high in the standings.
I mean, they got it done on the last day of the season, finally, right? They won won one away game.
And it was funny with that. I was talking to a couple of the players. There was a Museum of Immigration event, and a couple of the players were speaking, and a couple other teammates were there in support, and I was just chatting with them, and they're just like, we need to get that win. Like, even though they were out of contention for everything, I think just for their morale, they wanted to get that win.
Yeah, what's the buzz with the team this offseason? Obviously, this year was a smashing success. I don't think we need to repeat that. But, you know, what have you heard, I guess, from the supporters there and from the club about trying to sort of build up for year two? I'm sure there's lots of excitement there, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement. I think the reality of professional sports and soccer as a whole, like players don't stay forever. Teams change quite a bit from year to year. And I think a lot of the Wanderers fans initially were disappointed with some of the players that have said they're not coming back. But on the flip side, there's a lot of excitement for the players who are returning, a lot of hype for the guys from the U Sports draft and the Montreal University players. So I think overall there's a high level of excitement and just kind of a sense that changes had to happen, because if a team finishes in last place, you don't want to just roll out with the same squad, because who's to say the same thing wouldn't happen again?
I mean, the Wanderers have probably been, I'd say, probably the most active team since the season's ended, I think, in terms of kind of roster changes and stuff. Like, what are you kind of making of all this? Because we've got big pieces coming back. We've got...
Well, yeah, you've got...
I can't even remember the list right now, but...
Well, Christian Ochsner was a big one. And, you know, obviously, Akeem Garcia is a huge
Rampersad piece to have back.
Yeah, what do you think about those returners?
Yeah, well, I mean, Ochsner, I think he really established himself as a fan favorite because he's a local player and he played university here. But it wasn't just because he's local. He actually saved their butt a couple times, including that penalty save against Dominic Malonia late in the season in that 0-0 draw.
Multiple penalty saves, right? There was a number.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking of that one in particular at home. Just the kitchen went nuts and, you know, it was quite a moment. So I think it's really cool that I guess he was the first re-signing for this year, was a local player, and it wasn't just out of convenience. It was more out of necessity, really. So I think there's a lot of excitement with that. I think Andre Rampersad, he really, I think he kind of flew under the radar a bit as a solid midfielder all year. He was consistent, and I think having someone like him just brings more experience and kind of some... you kind of know what you're going to get from them in the middle. So I think those were two really important initial signings.
Yeah, it's also good to see Ensa back, Krisnovic Ensa, because he's only 20. And he logged a ton of hours. I think he was over 1,500 or something or more, played a ton of minutes. So what are you hearing on the ground in terms of some of these other player signings? I think we're going to get a few more before the holidays, and then obviously after that it sort of heats up. But what have you been hearing maybe from Steven or from around the club about some potential players and targets coming in?
Yeah, well, I haven't heard anything too specific about players who might be coming in. I know I wasn't actually at the event, but just hearing from some of the privateers and friends who were at the event, Derek Martin, the team's president, was saying kind of expecting 6 to 7 players from last year returning. And I think, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I think we're kind of in that range right now.
Yeah, I think you guys are at 6 right now, I believe, out in Halifax.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you look at those numbers, I mean, I think a lot of people here would like to see Peter Schala come back. He was certainly a fan favorite and he was kind of the heart and soul of that defense up until he went back to CBU. So I think he's the one that everybody would really like to come back. So maybe he's that number 7, not really sure what his status is at, but I think there are a couple of players like that that both the fans and I think teammates would like to have come back as well.
Yeah, he was an interesting case. I talked to him at the because he was playing at the U Sports Championships in Montreal, and he said, well, you know, I've got still a bunch of school left in these finals, actually. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And who knows? Maybe, you know, we have yet to see I think we're going to get into this probably later in the show, but we haven't got into any sort of like inter-team transfers, right? And movements. So that could still be a potential, especially a player like that where, you know, he technically is a free agent after his deal with the Wanderers. So who knows where he'll end up.
I don't know really, if I'm him, I don't know why I'd want to go anywhere else.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So who is your big surprise? I know that obviously it's hard kind of going into a season with a bunch of players that, you know, have never played with each other and kind of a whole new level, but who really surprised you this season for the Wanderers?
For me, I'd say Matthew Arnone was my big surprise. He was a late signing, one of the last players to join the team, I believe. And he got better as the year got on. Moved along. I mean, he did score a couple goals, which obviously were super important. I think he had the first road goal as well.
Took a while.
So, he could chip in a little bit that way. But I think when Shella did leave, Arnone kind of stepped up and took over that back line. And I mean, he was given the Privateers Player of the Year award. It didn't go completely unnoticed, but he was a guy who I just didn't think he was going to turn out to be that important based on what I saw early on in the season and where he was at the end.
That's a really good shout, actually, because I think, especially probably outside of Halifax, he kind of went under the radar a little bit. Like, everybody was talking about Shala for most of the season as this standout center back in Halifax, and nobody was really talking about Arnone, but he was really steady all year, wasn't he? Like, Halifax is a good, pretty good defensive team most of the time, especially at home, and he was right in the middle of it. So
maybe we'll ask Ryan, but I personally think if you sort of melded Valor and the Wanderers together, if you're able to like just shove them together, like
put in some
Valor's
sort of attack
way,
on top of yeah,
you'd have a pretty good,
good football team. I'd watch that.
Yeah. And quickly, just an update on the kitchen. I know you know some people that are in the supporter section out there. What do season ticket sales look like? Is there anything that you hear in terms of plans for 2020 with that group?
Yeah, well, I know just from my personal friend group, a lot of them have purchased season tickets for next year that didn't have them last year. So just from my little network, I know season ticket sales are looking good. But from what I've heard from most people, they're excited for the kickoff next year. I haven't heard anything too specific about plans, but I think now that people know each other from going to the games together all year, I think the songs are starting to come together a little bit more. There'll be players returning, so they'll kind of already know the style of some of the players. They'll know who they like. And I mean, I do truly hope that they keep singing "My Heart Will Go On" to Stephen Hart every game, because that was my favorite thing up in the media.
It is so, that is so good. Yeah, I loved those as well.
It's amazing. I guess maybe we'll just finish up with a sort of broad outlook for 2020. Like, what's your kind of feel on how this team, I guess it's still early in the offseason, but how are they kind of shaping up? And I mean, we obviously know that there's holes to address in the lineup, but I guess, like, what's your kind of general feel on how this club is looking for the next season?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you finish last, the outlook is kind of, well, it's only up from here. And I think, really, bringing in a couple players from Montreal, U Sports, they know each other, they have that chemistry. And, I mean, where Halifax is so isolated, the Wanderers don't have the luxury of just dipping into a deep local pool of players. So I think getting some U Sports guys who are familiar playing with each other, playing against each other, I think that's going to help bring the team together. I think having Garcia and Rampersad, the two Trini players, back again, I think that's also great, just to have that leadership and familiarity. So I think the second year of the team, I mean, you have to have some optimism that it's going to be better, that the team isn't going to lose every game pretty much on the road and not lose at home pretty much every game. I think you're going to see that balance out a little bit. But I mean, Halifax isn't going to get any closer to Vancouver Island or Hamilton or Edmonton. So there are still going to be challenges there, but I think overall it's looking positive.
So we are continuing our climb up the ladder with Valor FC. second last. Not wooden spoon winners, but close
quite,
to it.
Not yeah, quite.
Tied on points with the Wanderers at on 28 across both the spring and the fall. And we are joined by Valor FC contributor for Campiel.ca, Ryan Brandt. Ryan, how are you doing?
Doing wonderful. It's Winnipeg, so it's quite chilly now, so I'm missing the soccer weather.
Well, we were just talking about, so Armin isn't here because the weather in Toronto, and I'm sure you knew about the weather in Toronto from the news out there, but yeah, I mean, it seemed like the weather, okay, well, the weather cooperated in Winnipeg this year. I was shocked at
it
that.
It seemed like it, for the most
yeah,
part.
Yeah, certainly, other than, I don't know if you guys saw the picture earlier on in the season when the field was so wet, they brought shop vacs out onto the field to vacuum. I'd never seen a soccer field vacuumed in my life. It worked. They played the game, and it all worked out. So that was a new one. So it's always new experiences in the first season.
That's so interesting. Okay, well, let's get into this. So post-mortem on the season, I think Valor, as we mentioned with the Wanderers, obviously very good going forward, some issues at the back, and obviously a big mixed bag. But how do you kind of rate Valor this season and moving into 2020?
I think it'll mostly be defined by injuries that came at just terrible times. It seemed whenever Valor would finally pick up some momentum, a key player on the roster would get injured. You look at Joseph Golubar, and early on you wondered how he was going to fit into this team, and then he really started to emerge as one of the veteran midfielders in the league, and he goes down in that game in Calgary, as does Michael Petrasso, who is expected to be a star player in this league. And you move forward throughout the season, Adam Mitter comes in, starts to find himself and maybe solidify things at the back. He goes down, he gets injured, and it just kind of rolled on as the season went on, to a point where Tyson Farago played through a game with a broken finger because they didn't have a goalkeeper available. So it was really what we'll maybe look back on season one for Valor was injuries leave us wondering what could have been. I don't think they were contending for first or second in the league, but I think they really could have been in the fight to be higher up in that middle class.
I think in terms of kind of roster turnover, like we've heard a lot from most clubs, but I think it's been almost radio silence from Valor so far. Is there anything that you kind of are expecting or anything that you like know about what maybe Rob Gale's plans are for this offseason?
The easiest indication I have right now is that all, if not, or most, if not all of the local content on this team is going to be returning for next season. That seemed to be the case for guys like Rafael Ojeda and Tyson Farago, Marco Bustos, who are remaining here in Winnipeg training in the offseason. Also spending time here in Winnipeg in the offseason are co-captains Skylar Thomas and former captain Jordan Morel. So it's anticipated those guys will all be back. Jose Galan made it clear when he signed with the team mid-season that he wanted to stay in Winnipeg and stay in Canada going forward, even
and
outside
he's
of
been
the
in,
soccer season. Have you guys seen his Instagram, by the
way? I was just going to say, yeah. He's been very engaged in the community, which is great to see.
Yeah,
He has seen more of Manitoba than I have in 4 years. Like I haven't got out to the Northern Lights yet, and he already has.
Has he been to Gimli?
I would assume he's been out that way, at least towards the water. Gimli,
I don't know what that is.
Okay, so then Dylan Sacramento as well. So he's out on loan in New Zealand right now. So you're expecting him back, obviously. What other Winnipeg players are you expecting to return here?
Yeah,
pretty much right?
Kind of the main guys there, Tyson Farago, Rafael Ojeda, who I think we're all pretty excited to see what he can do in year two as he found his footing later on in the season. Took a while maybe to earn the trust of the coach to stay out there. We do know, obviously, that Adam Mitter was among the players that will not be returning. Glenn Mooncat also not coming back. I think it seems to be the question marks being those guys that Dylan Carrero, Michael Petrasso, and where their future will be. Petrasso, I believe, is on a one-year deal, so I don't know if he's going to be coming back. And you would hope that, as a fan of seeing development coming from this Canadian Premier League, that he showcased himself enough to maybe make a step towards getting back to Major League Soccer, or if it's Europe, if those are in his plans. But I don't know if we'll see Petrasso back in Winnipeg, but for people kind of tracking the guys that really contributed for Valor FC, Marco Bustos, I am 100% certain he's going to be back for season two.
Yeah, that's a massive, awesome. Massive retention there for Valor. So we saw Rob Gale is, I believe, in the States right now, is doing some scouting. But what have you heard in terms about adding players and positions that maybe they're looking to fill here?
Well, I think that the defense is going to be a main focus in his off season. We'll get a look at some of the players that come in through the through the Campiel U Sports draft, and that will be fun. I remember last year, you look back to training camp and some names that disappeared once camp kind of closed out, so who some of those new faces could be, and an undrafted player that I would assume will get a very close look as we get to camp, and a midfielder is going to be in Kalen Boudou, who played at Cape Breton this past season. He's had a really good university career so far. He's a Winnipegger. I got to see him a lot at WSA Winnipeg, so he's one that I think will be I know he's coming and will be taking part in Valor's training camp, just seeing whether or not he earns a contract from it.
Is it because didn't he train with them last summer, I believe?
Yeah, there was a contingent of local players that would just kind of get to take part, mostly the semi-pro guys that play in that league kind of south of the border, just to maybe fill some bodies. Valor obviously dealt with a lot of injuries throughout the season, so Boudou was a teammate of eventual Valor backup goalkeeper Svetek Artemenko, who I think might also be a guy that takes part in camp. The goalkeeping position will be interesting, whether it's Farago retaining the number one position if Matthias Janssens ends up coming back, and we'll see what happens with Svetek, who ended up being a pretty important piece in case another injury popped up.
Yeah, he was on the bench for most of the season, it seemed. So in terms of, like, taking a step off the pitch here, Ryan, you know, it seemed like Winnipeg really took to Valor FC, and obviously their connection with the Blue Bombers helped, and IG Field helped. But what are you kind of seeing from the fan culture this past season, and how do you see it sort of evolving in 2020 in Winnipeg?
Yeah, it's good you mentioned the Blue Bombers. I think it was kind of a hybrid of both of those things, that the Red River Rising group was able to be organized quick. They were at this early, I think almost 2 seasons or 2 years anyways, before the Canadian Premier League had kicked off, which was a great step moving forward. They were able to establish something and were known for the noise they were making. They came out to practices and were bringing their flares and their drums. So it was interesting stuff, and got the players certainly excited and a reason to play for them. And the Bombers, they brought forward a product that was, you know, advertises a very professional environment, and that was what people in the city understood very quickly, that this was a professional soccer team coming to town and that it was going to be sharing IG Field with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And I heard lots of stories of people that weren't even soccer fans, that because of the Bombers and season tickets would go and check out a soccer game or two just to see it, and said, I'll be coming back and probably bringing a bigger group of people next time. So we'll keep an eye on the attendance for next season, because I know Valor started strong, and as the season wore on and the Bombers looked set to go on their run for the Grey Cup, things kind of changed, but it was a great start, I think, in this first season.
Yeah, how are the Bombers doing?
They're still partying, I think.
Oh yeah, they won. Yeah, okay.
They did win the Grey Cup. So it was a pretty big deal, and I think that is something that's going to really bode well for Valor moving forward, as the merchandise has been flying off the shelves.
Nice.
It's always good news for the Winnipeg Football Club, which is the parent company that owns both Valor FC and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Well, and something to keep in mind that people maybe not from Winnipeg would not see is just the basic infrastructure of the Bombers from a, like, commercial standpoint. Like, you see that the Bombers have stores, like physical brick-and-mortar stores, and you walk in there and there's Valor stuff. You know, I think that goes a long way, right?
Oh, certainly it does, and it's kind of someone that was an import to the Prairies, and the passion that everybody in Manitoba gets behind their local teams, and it's not just showing up and supporting. Everybody that goes buys merchandise and wants to be kind of decked out in the colors of whatever team it is, if it's the Bombers, the Jets, and now Valor. So it's a sports town, and Winnipeg's sports market has certainly grown, but it seems like there's enough room for everybody.
Perfect. So, Ryan, just one last thought here. Looking ahead to 2020, what are some expectations on the field we could be looking for? Or, you know, what are your expectations personally about this club? Maybe taking the next step to challenge for a mid-table, like you said, or perhaps even further.
Yeah, I think that I'm intrigued at how mum the word is being out of Winnipeg in terms of some of these signings. And you wonder if there's some heavy looks that Rob Gale is doing to bring in some big name talent. I know that in the lead up to season one, there was some opportunities and conversations to bring some star power to Valor FC, and certain things that just didn't work out, and a lot of what could have been that we wonder about in this postseason. So I would assume he's right back at that again, and hoping that this time it actually works out and they can add a little bit of star power to this team that will be made up of some more local players and a group of Canadians that Rob is his dealings with from his time at Canada Soccer.
And moving on up the Canadian Premier League ladder in 2019, Pacific FC, 31 points, so ahead of Valor and the Wanderers, 8 wins, 7 draws, and 13 losses. We're joined by Martin Bauman, our Vancouver Island Can't Be All That Say contributor. Martin, how are you doing?
Marty, I'm doing great. You know what this feels like to me is, I don't know if either of you are Seinfeld fans, but you know the episode where Elaine meets like the bizarro Jerry, George, and Kramer? I feel like I'm the bizarro Marty of this podcast right now. but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, okay, well, thanks, man. Yeah, thanks, I guess. Just for the record, my name is not Martin. Never no. call me Martin. Some people do, and I like... It's tough. I kind of do a grin through it, but it's tough.
Aww.
It's not my name. It's literally not my name. Okay, enough of that. Let's get to Pacific FC. So, obviously, a super young team in 2019. Mm-hmm. We can get into Silberbauer's departure as well. But this was a club that was set up with young players in mind. And obviously, 2019 was a bit of a building block. But how did you rate the season as a whole for this club and moving into 2020?
Well, I think you've said it there with youth being really a factor. If I was to give it a grade, I don't know, it'd be a different, more difficult task for me. But I think, you know, there are positives to take away. The youth movement was significant in that they were able to give a lot of young players a lot of time. But were they competitive in any sort of sense of being able to contend? I mean, not really. I think them, much like almost half the league or more, unless you're Forge or Cavalry, really, they weren't really competing for the title this year. I think you can't really talk about this season without talking about injuries, though, and that was such a big factor for this team.
Were you kind of surprised about the way things unfold? I mean, obviously, we knew they were going to be a young club, but I don't know if we knew they were going to be this young. Like, the kids would really just get the keys to the car over the likes of, like, Marcus Haber, and, I mean, obviously, Marcel Dion was hurt all year, but... It really ended up being more of a club for young guys than maybe even we expected going into the year.
Completely. I think that surprised me just how many minutes some of the young players got. I mean, clearly they earned it, and many of them earned it early on in the season. And I do think part of it was a factor of, I mean, Marcel Dion goes down. Someone's got to step in there. Marcus Haber got injured fairly early into the season. And again, that opened up a spot for Taron Campbell to slide into the striker role. But you know, when the season began, I remember the talk was all about Haber and Issei and Fisk, right? Those are going to be kind of the three guys. And I think Ben Fisk lived up to his billing, but both Marcus Haber and Issei, either due to injury or just other factors, I mean, we didn't see nearly as much of them as we might have thought. And instead, it was guys like Taron Campbell. It was guys like Noah Verhoeven early on. It was guys like Zach Verhoeven later and Alessandro Hojabrapur. So kudos to the young guys for taking their chances. I think that probably did play a factor in Pacific not finishing as strongly as they might have. I mean, you play youth like that, and the consistency is not always going to be there. I think that was probably where Pacific suffered most. You might get great results one week, but you might not have, you might put out a stinker the next week. And so I think that was a factor. But also, well, it's going to benefit them next year, just that these guys have played a full season. A lot of them have logged quite a lot of minutes already.
Yeah, so 13,000 minutes in total for under 21 players for Pacific FC. 13,000, and the next team would be Valor, and I think they had 5,400.
I think that's more than the rest of the league combined.
I think it's close. Yeah. I think it's close. So, yeah, like Taron Campbell, like 2,300 minutes. Caden Chung, over 2,000. Norva Hoven, over 1,800. And I'm glad that you mentioned the likes of Marcus Haber and Issei Nekajima-Farin, because I think that there's some question marks there with those players in this club right now. Where do you think that their role will be moving forward? We don't know if they're re-signed or not, or what their situations are. But where do you see these sort of players outside of this bubble, these older players, these experienced players, finding a role in 2020?
Well, those two, and I think Marcel DeYoung is in this camp too, although, I mean, he's maybe a little bit more off the hook because of just how long he was kept out because of injury. But I think those three, if you look at DeYoung and Haber and Issei, they're all going to be, they have to be motivated to prove that that they're still, you know, worthy of a spot in 2020. That this past year wasn't a fluke. That performance was, you know, hampered by injury and not by them just being past any sort of prime. I think if I was a player in that situation, I mean, any player, any professional athlete is usually ultra competitive. I think these guys have to be thinking of this off season as a chance to get back and prove that they're still able to contribute. Marcus Haber, his role, I think, might look different than Issei's just because of a bit of a difference in age there. For me, Issei, and maybe, you know, maybe he's got different goals than I would for him, but I think of him as a guy, if he can put in, you know, a good 20 to 30 minutes, if he can be a sub at sort of the latter half of a match, that I think will be a good season for him. If he can come in and provide some scoring threat off the bench, I think I'd be happy with that if I was Pacific's manager. Haber, you'd be looking for him to start still, I think, but it's just a question of how is he going to fit in with Pacific's attack and how it's found a guy like Taron Campbell. Can those two coexist? And can guys like that coexist with somebody like a Victor Blasco, Ben Fisk? There's a lot of scoring options on Pacific, and it's just about finding a formation that's going to provide the optimal, you know, kind of results with all those guys, and that's, I think, going to be the challenge.
So we can't really talk about Pacific season without mentioning the coaching change, which came around at the end of the year. And, I mean, were you surprised that they let Michael Silverbauer go? And, I mean, how do you think they're kind of going to respond to this heading into another new season with a new coach? Like,
Yeah. Well, I think everyone was surprised, partially at least just because of the timing of things. I mean, it's not often that you hear of a manager sacked before the season's over. You know, this is only one match left in the season. So generally, you know, the timing would have made more sense to some people just to wait until the off season and then do it then when it's not going to cause any sort of stir. I mean, it's going to have people like us talk about it right before the last game of the season. And that could prove as a distraction. Now, to his credit, I mean, I talked to Rob Friend about this and he said, no, the timing was part of this. We wanted to do it so that we could shake these guys up and get a result in this last game. And
it worked.
So it worked out that time. Maybe it could have gone differently. But now there is a question about who are they going to bring in here? I mean, James Merriman was the interim coach, and I think he's, you know, continued in that capacity. I don't know if he'd be the front runner to hang on. He certainly has, I think, the respect of a lot of his players. A lot of the young guys that I've talked to, they had history with him already through the Whitecaps, you know, academy. And so I think he's got a reputation with those players, but I don't know if he'd be the front runner. So I'll be as interested as you are to see who they bring in. But again, it's tough, right? You don't want to create a culture where you've got a rotating door as your head coach, and then you can't create any consistency and any sort of culture. I think players want some stability. So I think it's imperative that they get it right, whoever they bring in.
Yeah, if not Merriman, there's tons of coaches out there that have connections to, like you mentioned, with basically the Vancouver Whitecaps presidency is where this team came from. So there's tons of coaches that have influence there. Before we let you go here, Marty or Martin, I'm not sure. I think you're actually me in this scenario. I'm still trying to figure out where we are in that. But what's something we can look forward to in 2020 with this team? Where do you kind of see things lining up? Do you think that the young players will end up sort of carrying this team, you know, maybe past third place and maybe into the top two? Or do you see things kind of being similar year over year?
I think they're going to make incremental improvements. Whether they're going to be top two, I mean, so much of it's going to depend on how these rosters across the league look. But I mean, Forge and Cavalry, I think, are still, you know, the gold standard. You're going to have to get past them somehow. Now, Pacific's shown that they can get a result against Cavalry. Mind you, that was probably a different Cavalry squad than most of the season, that Canada Day win. That was a big one for Pacific.
That was a strange game. That was so
really weird game.
And the Issei free kick at the end as well. The whole thing was strange.
Exactly, completely. But what I'm most excited for 2020, I think, you know, Tommy Gardner getting drafted by Pacific once again. That was a guy who, you know, was drafted early last year and then was hampered by injuries. I think he's really hoping to have his health on his side this time, and that could be an exciting player to watch. But again, just the development of guys. Rob Friend, he thought that Taron Campbell could have a 20-goal season. I think that's maybe a bit optimistic. But to see where Taron Campbell takes year two, and to see, I mean, my favorite player to watch has been a guy like Zach Verhoeven, just because of how the guy with the ball at his feet is really something. You see him dribble into like two or three defenders, and somehow And he's such a small guy, but he somehow manages to keep the ball at his feet and escape kind of unscathed every time. So I'll be excited to see how guys like him continue to develop in year two. I mean, because these guys are so young, they are, I think, growing by leaps and bounds year after year to where you're going to see quite significant growth.
So now we've moved into firmly the mid-table. There is really only one mid-table spot in fourth, FC Edmonton. And we're joined by CampYell.ca contributor Steven Sandor. Steven, you've been on the podcast before, but how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
So FC Edmonton, obviously at one point they were first. Let's not forget. They were first, tied for first, I believe in like August in the fall standings. But they had sort of a wishy-washy season. They came and went. What's your initial thoughts about how 2019 went as a reporter of the club and maybe looking forward to 2020?
I think on field, if you asked really anyone through the team, they would not have been happy if you had told them at the start of the year that they would be, as you said, a mid-table team when all things wrapped up. I think, you know, I think there was a lot said, and accurately so, as proven by the final, about Forge and Cavalry in the preseason. But I think as the only CanPL team coming into this that had a history, and in fact an extensive history in academy, and all of the infrastructure that the other teams did not have coming in, I think you would have put, you know, if there was any other team that you would have said, yeah, they're going to be up there with Calgary and Forge, it would have been Edmonton, simply because of, you know, of all the people they were bringing in. They were bringing in some NASL veterans to shore up a team of some, you know, very sort of interesting players. And so I think that the expectations were quite high. And, you know, they're around the league, more than one person had said to me, and these were other coaches from other teams, that they fully expected Edmonton to be there at the end, and not just in Edmonton, that they expected Edmonton to sort of be there at the final. And that didn't happen. So obviously that didn't happen. So I think there is a, you know, sense of disappointment and, you know, kind of what happened and where did things go wrong? I mean, this team had some real bright spots through the year, but they also had a couple of real long streaks, in one in the spring and one in the fall, that really ended up decimating their seasons.
Yeah. Do you think that those streaks are kind of worrying to you in the squad that maybe Jeff Paulus put together, in that, you know, they really weren't able to snap out of some of these slumps? They went 10 games without a win. Does that worry you? Do you think that's going to be something we'll see next year?
Well, I think, you know, we had the one streak in the spring where I think it was 6 games without a goal. And then there was the 10 game winless streak in the fall. And it all goes down. I mean, everyone will tell you. I mean, we'd sit around a table. We could have every CanPL person on the site and all the contributors for the other teams too. And we all say the same thing. This is a team that struggled to score. They average less than a goal a game. So almost all of those struggles that they had can be pinpointed back to their lack of offense. So, you know, as good as they had some bright spots, especially Easton Ongaro and the 10 goals that he chipped in all the fall season, the fact is that they weren't getting goals from other places. And I think you look at a team like Cavalry, or look at Forge, guys popped up throughout the line. You can talk about Tristan Borges, you can talk about Jordan Brown, Dominic Malonga, but the fact is that throughout both those teams' lineups, to be successful, they guys pick up and score. You would see that they get goals from their fullbacks, they get goals from midfield, they would get goals from around the lineup, and it was pretty balanced in the end. Edmonton, it wasn't like that. It was no balance. It was like the strikers scored, or the forwards scored. Umar Diop got some goals. Yep. Tomi Ameobi got a couple. And then you looked at their midfield, and I think, and I might be wrong here, you know, someone might call, I think they only got 2 goals straight from the midfield all year long. And I think Bruno Zebi with 1.
Yeah, and
against Pacific, and then Ramon Soria on a free kick. And I think the fact that I can like remember the goals from midfield like is
indicative.
Easily,
yeah.
It is indicative of, you know, they got a couple of goals from at center back from LA Temgia, who came up on set pieces and was effective, and Amir Didic from the center back position, you know, had some assists and could really move the ball and was good at winning first balls on set pieces as well. but they didn't have that dynamic central midfield player that could pop up and score or create something out of nothing. And then when you see other teams play Edmonton, and you would see the likes of Sergio Camargo do well against Edmonton or Jose Escalante. There's one game where Tristan Borges, you know, really went to town. And I think all year long, Michael Petrasso was just a nightmare for FC Edmonton, as Valor was a bit of a bogey team for them too. But you looked at those sort of dynamic guys that could create from midfield that Edmonton didn't have. And I think that's, you know, the number one thing for the offseason. I think the Strikers did as well as can be expected with the service they had and what they had to work with. But I think the midfield was built to win the ball, and they had a lot of great organization and defensive wherewithal. Mm-hmm. But that ability to, you know, to think outside the box and create that chance or finish a chance out of midfield just really didn't happen for this team.
Right, yeah, and FC Edmonton's in an interesting position right now where we're, you know, not even midway through December, and most of the roster is spoken for except for, you know, like Amir Didic, who, as you mentioned, on KMPL.ca, Jeff Paulus had a great quote talking about, look, he could still move to MLS. So, but most of the roster is taken care of, and, you know, you've got, like, Connor James coming back, as we've already mentioned, Mele Timguia, you know, East Nogaro, so some important pieces. But what are you hearing on the ground there in Edmonton about who could potentially be coming in? Is there, you know, specific players that they're targeting? Any sort of hints in that regard?
I think as well. I mean, right away, I think with the signing of Hanson Boakai, we've seen that change already to get that dynamic midfield player. For Hanson to return to Edmonton, you know, was it four or five years after going to Europe? and coming back, and I think that's going to be a lot's going to be expected out of him to be that sort of creative number 10 player who plays behind the forwards and, you know, can be creative, can beat a defender on the dribble, can penetrate. They're also going to need to get more out of their wings in production. I think what was really interesting, and if you look at the law of the winless streak in the fall season, we talked a lot about Easton Ongaro at forward. We talked a lot about Connor James and Nett as being Edmonton's two most valuable players. But the players voted. They didn't vote that way. They voted for the players voted Jeannot Essawa, the fullback, as the team's MVP.
Interesting.
And I think if you looked at that 10-game losing streak after Essawa got suspended and then had injury problems, a lot of Edmonton's losses sort of dovetail when he's not playing. I think he's the most underrated fullback in the league. I think that that in terms of players that we don't talk about as much, the Cameroonian fullback was a player who's a real catalyst for them, but he wasn't in the lineup enough simply because of the injuries and what have you in the second half of the season. If you take a look at his creativity down the wing, that was a thing. And I think getting back to what Edmonton needs to change, I mean, Essawa's going to come back. And I think a healthy season from him is almost like signing a player. Like if he can be, you know, play a little bit more than he did this year. I think as well, Jeff Paulus, to get players, and I think he'd be the first to tell you this, played some guys out of position. I don't know if he wants to do that so much this year. You know, I think he would rather have had Alan Zebby playing in the middle of the park rather than at the other fullback slot, but he had him there. Because of just the way the team had broken down. I think he would like to move him back into a more central midfield spot and get another fullback who's a little bit dynamic to dovetail with Essawa. So, you know, Essawa down the right and maybe another fullback down the left.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's looking for all sorts of – and they're looking for wing players. They, you know, FC Edmonton when they were NASL and even now, what they loved were wing players who could cut in off the wing, you know, off the other foot. So a lot of times, FC Edmonton and NASL used right-footed players on the left wing, left-footed players on the right wing, because obviously you're shuffling when you cut inside, you're on your strong foot to shoot. And they really like that option. And I think you're going to go back to that because they're going to look for that kind of player. The kind of player who can be dynamic, who can shuffle in off the wing, and just give you more of an option, because if you make the defenders think a little bit, if you're going to go down the wing and try to cross, or if you're going to kind of cut in and try to run across the top of the box, it creates a, you know, a big difference for them. It was something that when Ben Fisk was in Edmonton, you know, obviously the Pacific last year, you know, did a great job for them in the past. I think of other players that Edmonton had the NASL days, like Lance Lang, the Jamaican international, who was just fabulous on set pieces and with that ability to shuffle in off the wing. Mm-hmm. So you they got to find more players like that, I think, to take the pressure off and to create some goals out of the midfield and off the wings. Because, you know, Easton Ongaro has predicted that he will win the scoring title next year. You know, very famously has said he thinks he's going to win the scoring title next year. But even if he scores, let's say, 20 goals, if they don't get goals from anyone else, it's not enough.
And now it's time for York 9 with none other than Campiel.ca's very own James Grossi. James, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you boys doing today?
Good.
Fantastic.
Good. So we're filing through all these teams here, and now it's time for York 9. So we've only got, I guess, two more teams to go after this. So let's talk about the team that finished third. Kind of an interesting season where they finished so strong that I think a lot of supporters are kind of going into this offseason pretty optimistic, but how do you rate the season as a whole, considering how wishy-washy it was?
Yeah, I think, you know, there were pretty high expectations for York going into this year, given sort of the players that they had, that they brought in, and the talent pool sort of available to them in the greater Toronto area. So it was a bit of a slow start from the group. That was probably always going to be the case, given the way that the schedule panned out for them in that spring season, where they started with a whole whack of road games, and it was really hard to find any momentum. But, you know, they finished that spring season strong and sort of got things together. And as you guys mentioned, they finished the fall season in third place and third overall. I think it was in some ways a function of the way Jimmy wanted this team to play, where, you know, there's a way to play where you keep the game simple and you score more goals than the opponent and you keep things tight at the back. And then there's a more complicated way of going about things. And Jimmy and York 9 really had a complex system in the middle of the park. There was a lot of rotation, a lot of moving pieces. And I think it took them a good 10, 15 games to really sort of get to know each other and get on the same page. And once they did, it really sort of came together for them. I think a big part of that was also, you know, Simon Ajayi sort of finding his scoring boots towards the latter third of the season. And
it was re-signed this week as well, so he's coming back.
Yeah, no, he's a big pickup for them, and I'm really excited to see what he can do next year.
York 9 had a pretty steady trajectory, I thought, kind of throughout the whole season. They were like, they weren't wavering from their kind of course of, this is how we want to play football, and nothing's going to change that. And we kind of actually saw it bear fruit at the end of the year. So it's a really good thing that they've got so many of these key pieces coming back. They've got Aparicio coming back, and they've got obviously Ingham back in goal. And they've got even guys like Ajayi and
Gasparato is a big one as well.
Gasparato, yeah, and a fullback. So I don't know. Like, do you think that this is kind of a trajectory that they'll just keep lifting off in into 2020?
Yeah, I think that was always the plan when it came to a lot of these teams that were going through their first year, was sort of, you know, bring in all the guys that you can, put together as good of a club as you can, and sort of look to build off of a core group from this first year into the second year. And so, you know, all these guys, you know, Morifushi, I think he's back as well. Mm-hmm. Gasparato, as you mentioned, having a core group of guys that have put in, you know, 30 plus games together going into this second year can only bode well for a team. So
the one name that just comes to mind here, though, is Ryan Telfer.
Yes.
What? I don't know. I don't know what we know about his deal at the moment, because he's obviously he was on loan from TFC. He wasn't picked up. Like, his option wasn't picked up by them. So I guess he's a free agent now. So do we know anything about what's going on in Ryan Telfer's circles?
I would assume there are a lot of conversations going on for Ryan these days. Mm-hmm.
That's vague enough, I think.
I was pretty surprised that TFC didn't pick up his option, to be honest. And then I was also surprised that he didn't draw any interest from other MLS teams in the re-entry draft. And I suppose part of that is because I'm pretty sure he counts as an international because he didn't he wasn't a homegrown player, so he didn't spend a lot of time in TFC's system. So, you know, apparently word is that York 9 are in pretty extensive conversations with him, and there have been rumblings that other CPL teams have been interested as well, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. You'd be pretty hard-pressed to argue that he's not a top 5, top 10 player in this league in terms of not just his production and what he adds to the teams in terms of an attacking threat, but he's also he's proved himself to be a pretty big box office. He's an exciting guy to watch, and he's got a penchant for stepping up in those big moments, especially when it comes to scoring firsts and such. And so I'm almost certain he's having a lot of conversations right now, and he'll probably be taking his time to make sure he puts himself in the right position. And in the back of my mind, I don't have any hard evidence for this, but in the back of my mind, there's a part of me that wonders that now that he's an international and he's got that Trinidad and Tobago on his resume, I wouldn't be surprised if he's drawn some overseas interest. He looked quite good in the CONCACAF Nations League matches that we caught little glimpses of. And, you know, I'm sure those are games that are scouted pretty widely, especially with the connections between TNT and England. So it's just a little bit of speculation on my part, but I'm sure his phone is getting a workout this time of year.
Well, not to get too sidetracked, but I was maybe sort of disappointed, like you were, James, where, okay, so he goes on loan. He scores the first goal in league history, scores against an MLS team, scores, like you said, the first international goal from any player, gets called up, obviously, and has, like, by any standard, sort of a milestone year, and then Toronto FC decides not to take him. I thought that was really interesting where, you know, you maybe let him go, yes, he's at the end of his deal, but you know what, prove yourself. He proved himself, and then they said no.
He proved himself at the MLS level for them this season.
Oh yeah, that's true. Let's not forget about that.
Like, came
an
on
assist
for like 5
on that
minutes
game.
And assisted a goal.
Yeah, not to get too sidetracked, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk to TFC after they made those roster decisions. Locker cleanout day was before then, so we haven't heard a good explanation for what it was. And you know, with the collective bargaining agreement being up and the off season sort of in full swing over there as well, you know, I'm sure that's still one of those conversations that he has ongoing is whether it makes sense for him to go back there. I think with the uncertainty in this off season across a whole range of leagues and spectrums, it has a lot of moving pieces. And so, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he popped up in any of 5 or 6 places.
So you've obviously spent a lot of time at York Lions Stadium this year. What's your favorite memory?
Favorite memory? There were a lot of pretty good moments there, you know.
You had the 6-2 against the Wanderers.
The 6-2 against Wanderers is definitely an honorable mention, but I think the two that really stood out for me, well, I never like to limit myself to one when I'm gonna have a whole bunch. So there were a couple of moments at York Lions Stadium that really stood out to me. I think you have to look at towards the end of the season, they had the big 4-0 win over Forge, their first the first taste of success from the Ontario Derby, and that contentious 1-1 game against Cavalry where the Cavs picked up a pair of red cards and Wataru pops up with a 96-minute equalizer. That was a pretty big moment and a couple of matches that sort of bode well for the future for this side and into year two. But I think if you're looking for the most concise answer to that question, I think the 9 minutes in between Ryan Telfer's blast against the Montreal Impact
in the
first goal in the first leg of their Canadian Championship Series, the 9 minutes between him hitting the back of the net, Gattas adding a second to put York in the driver's seat before Nate Ingham went walkabouts there and gave Montreal an equalizer from the penalty spot with Safra Tider slotting in. That was a pretty spectacular 9 minutes. And, you know, it was a full ground. It was a raucous crowd. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better sort of period of time up there at York Lions Stadium than those 9 minutes.
It really was. It was just an insane night. I mean, just across the board in every CPL team's stadium that night because we had 3 of those games. But that one stood out a lot. I guess maybe, like, as if we're looking ahead to 2020, I mean, York 9, they finished 3rd, but, like, what kind of areas do you think that they need to address going into this season? I mean, is Simon Adji the number 9 that they need, or is that something that they need to look at, or what kind of holes are you seeing?
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on the Telfer question.
Yeah.
You know, we saw him this year. You know, he was a wide player as far as most of us were concerned when he went on loan to York, and we saw him used a fair bit as a forward and a striker this year, and he proved pretty exceptional at that position, both in terms of how mobile he is and his ability to finish, as with that great moment we were just talking about right there. So if Ryan is returning to York, then that gives them a really tantalizing couple of attacking options in the books. I'd be very curious to see what a twosome of him and Ajay would look like after really committing to that sort of system and seeing what, you know, having that big central striker and a really mobile sort of rangy guy alongside him with Simon sort of holding up the defense and inching them backwards and Ryan sort of stretching them all over the place. I think that'd be a pretty fascinating thing to keep a look at. I think they need a solid 10 to 15 goal scorer, you know, just somebody that's going to reliably bank you a goal every other game or so, and who's a constant threat up top is something that every team sort of needs, and something, you know, York had their fair share of goal scorers this year between Telfer, Ajay, and Gattas, but there wasn't that guy that was really sort of dangerous all the time, the sort of Taron Campbells, the sort of Tristan Borges kind of guys that were just, anytime they got on the ball, the other team was occupied, and so that would be something I'd really be looking forward to. And aside from that, you know, I think, you know, you got your fullbacks locked down with Maury Doner and Abzi re-signed. You got the midfield more or less squared away with all the additions that we've seen there, or the re-signings, the re-uppings that we've seen there. And but I think, you know, alongside Gasparotto, we're looking for who's going to be that number two center back in the middle of the defense. You know, I was a little surprised that Daniel Gogarty wasn't going to be returning for year two. And, you know, when Roger Thompson was fit and sharp, he looked like a really good piece there. And Justin Springer brought some real useful versatility between his ability to play in the middle and out wide at times. And so, you know, neither one of them has as of yet been announced as returning. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what's going on. But I think I'd be looking there for a really big reinforcement if the possibility arises.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, I'm sort of looking at just getting some depth. You know, Jimmy wasn't very big on rotating. Once a guy earned the shirt, it was pretty hard to boot somebody out of their starting position. And you know, with the way that this schedule works and the travel and the congestion and everything like that, you need a little bit of rotation and you need some depth from positions 12 through 15 on your roster to really sort of contend with the big boys in this league.
So now we move from York 9 to the second place team. We'll say they're second place. I think Tommy Wheeldon Jr. would say
that's
something
different. That's a
contentious,
yeah. I don't know.
We're here with Sandra Priscina out in Calgary. Sandra, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
So Cavalry FC coming up short in finals 2019, but obviously winning the spring and the fall. How do you rate the season? Do you see it as a championship win in a way, or a league title? How do you rate the way the Cavalry played this year?
I think it was an incredible year for fans that were starved for soccer, especially in this city, and to embrace the team the way that they did and see a successful product from that opening game nearly to the very last game. So I think the fan base really embraced the team here. And yeah, I think they would see it as a successful season, not only taking the spring and fall sessions, but also an extended Canadian championship run, which saw two MLS sides come to Calgary in the first year of a league, that inaugural year, and you're having MLS sides come to your turf. I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day, they didn't get it done. And I've mentioned this quote from Tommy Wheeldon Jr. I think you should mention it again, where, you know, he went into that media room. You were there after the finals. He said, well, we're league champions. So, and I thought that I loved that quote because
he sticks to that hard, too.
He's sort of seeing it as a positive. So I guess from that case, you know, where do you see the squad going from here in terms of any sort of like personnel changes? Do you see a lot of changes coming? You know, the re-signings that are coming in seem to be pretty consistent.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of turnover because I think this really whet everybody's appetite. They were so close to achieving yet that ultimate plateau, but they fell just short. And I think that really gives you motivation into next season. And what I've noticed a lot about the players here with Cavalry, there's a lot of local talent. and they've really embraced being local players and what it means to be a Calgarian or somebody from southern Alberta and to play in the Canadian Premier League. They take that role very seriously. Somebody like Marco Carducci, who could have potentially gone somewhere else given the season that he had, but he's decided to stay home. So I think the players are really excited. They'll look at it with some unfinished business. And just being somebody that's covered the team here, I think that maybe they potentially thought there was a little bit of favoritism toward some of the Ontario, perhaps a bit of an Ontario bias. And I'm just saying that from some of the feedback I've gotten from the fans and stuff here. And I think it trickles down to the players. And they want people to make sure that they know Calgary's got a soccer team and a very good one at that.
Very good. I mean, I think they were a pretty well-rounded team all year, but is there anything that maybe, I don't know, just from being around Calgary, like, is there anything you're hearing about areas they might be kind of trying to address if they're taking a next step for next season?
Well, if I were a coach, and I'm not, but the way that I know Tommy Wilden Jr., and I've had the opportunity to get to know him for a few years now from his work with Foothills, and I think he'll want a little bit more in terms of just hunger for the goal. So Cavalry were very good at developing play and getting that ball up the pitch and scoring when it mattered, but I think they need to learn how to score early and not wait until those final dying minutes. They made wins dramatic, let me tell you. Like, it was a lot of fun covering them and waiting for them to score because you could feel that anticipation mounting. But I think setting the pace from the beginning of the game is something they'll look at improving and finishing the chances that they do have, because off the top of my head, I can think of Dominic Malonga and Jordan Brown, Jose Escalante, even a couple of times they have that nose for the net but missed that ultimate finishing piece to maybe put the team up and finish the job. So I think finishing will be something that they look toward.
Goodness knows they could have had that in the final when Dom Malonga missed like two open headers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough one. In terms of Spruce Meadows, I'm wondering what kind of changes will be coming there this offseason. I'm not sure if there will be much at all, but that is just such a unique ground. Do you know if there's any changes, floodlights, or anything else that might be happening there? I mean, you know, it just seemed like Spruce Meadows had this great platform in terms of a stadium and a facility. You know, how do you see that maybe growing next year, or if you've heard anything in particular?
Yeah, they continue to be a work in progress, and people need to know first and foremost that that's known as a world-class horse jumping venue. So when they took on Cavalry, this was new for everybody involved. And I have to tip my hat to the people at Spruce Meadows, because that opening game, there were issues with parking. There were a bunch of logistical issues, and they took all of the feedback, and for the next game, they had already worked to rectify things. Something else, putting cover over the stands that are on the east side of the field. And again, floodlights. Yeah, you mentioned that. I believe it was a Canadian championship game.
I didn't mention that.
Game.
Sorry. I didn't say that.
I hear things. I'm a journalist. It's okay. But a couple of games after, they had already improved that situation. And it was where I usually watch the game from. It's actually a patio area, and I look onto the field. And I happen to be sitting by a couple of people who rent, I don't know the technical terms, but they rent out big lighting fixtures. I don't know what the terminology is, and I'm sorry, but it does sound like they'll be working with Spruce Meadows to acquire certain lighting and certain fixtures going forward. And again, it's just a work in progress, and I think everybody is taking all of the feedback that they get, whether it be on social media or the people that go to the games, and they take it to heart and they work on improving. And it's everything from game day experience to what kind of beer is there, what kind of food is there, how they can improve the parking. And it's been really good talking to people, and I think people are impressed with, especially when we have some aging facilities in Calgary, obviously the Saddle Dome, and a new arena is coming here in a number of years, but the CFL stadium is very, very old, pretty decrepit. Actually, the CFL commissioner is saying we're never, until Calgary gets a new CFL venue, we're not holding a Grey Cup here anymore. So to see people at Spruce Meadows embrace change, I think that's super crucial, and it looks good on the team and on the league as well.
Yeah, before we look ahead to 2020, what is your favorite memory, I guess, either from Spruce Meadows or elsewhere with Cavalry FC
in
2019?
Well, Well, you're right, actually. You took the words out of my mouth. I have two, and the first one would be
Charlie,
the opening game.
Ruining
because
it.
When it started to snow, I thought to myself, this is the most Calgary thing ever.
Yeah.
Because there was snow, there was rain, there was wind, and yet the thing with Calgarians, we're super resilient when it comes to weather. So you dress in a bunch of layers, and then it gets warm, the sun comes out, and then you take the layers off, and you just enjoy yourself. So that memory and Dominic Zator's goal, and speaking of Dominic Zator, he takes me into my second favorite memory, and I didn't happen to be there, but BC Place. What happened there and the lift that that gave and just the vibe that was around the city the following days after, wow, RCPL team beat an MLS side and the first team to ever do that. I think that's really cool, and it'll be one of those amazing moments as this league continues to grow. You'll be able to look back on it and be like, ah, I remember that. Where was I when that happened?
So before we let you go, I guess if we just maybe look ahead here to 2020, like what's kind of your outlook on how they move forward? Like what's your very early feeling on how the next season could be?
Well, I was really excited to see the team pick up Jordan Brown again. I actually wasn't sure what his plan was for the future because
that's
I think
a good show,
he has
man.
A very good future. I thought he might end up in Europe again, but knowing that he wasn't even healthy the entire season, so to see him healthy, and this is maybe he's my dark horse for the Golden Boots for that Ooh. Scoring record. I think that he's going to quietly, especially like let's say if Dom Malonga doesn't come back, I don't really see Jose Escalante returning as well. So I think Jordan Brown will be given a bigger role. Someone I'm also really excited about is Mason Trafford because, as you know, he started the season injured, and it took him a while to gain that momentum and find his confidence as a center back. But if he can be healthy from the start of the season, that'll be great. And somebody I'm also excited for is Chris Serban. As you know, he didn't see any minutes. He was injured in, I believe it was preseason. And to see him hopefully be healthy and just solidify what a defensive core that Cavalry boasted this year, just to think what it could be next year as well.
We've reached the summit.
The top.
We've reached the very end of our seven-team journey with Forge FC, the 2019 Canadian Premier League champions. We're joined by CanFiel.ca's very own Arcadio Marcucci to discuss Forge's 2019 and their 2020. Arcadio, how are you?
Very good, guys. Thanks for having me.
So let's start recapping the 2019 season. So obviously a championship, and maybe not the best regular season because they obviously didn't win the spring and fall. The other team did. But how would you rate this season overall for Forge? Is this like an A++? Is this perfect? Or how do you rate the season as a whole for this club?
Yeah, I think you can say it's a huge success. Of course, they won the title, which is huge, forever first, right? I think it will be an A+ for me. Regular season, of course, it's important. There were two of them this year in CPL. They didn't win. Cavalry were on top both times in spring and fall. But I think overall what they managed to do building that squad from scratch, as you know, as the other teams did, but with having that kind of consistency and success and offensive flair as well. I like the way they played. I like what Bobby Smignard has brought to the table, tactically speaking. The players bought in. So for me, sportingly speaking, it was a huge success and deserved champion for the inaugural CPL season.
Yeah, I mean, what do you see in terms of building on this squad if you're Bobby Smyrniotis? Because, you know, well, a player you're familiar with, David Choinier, for example, like you have a guy like that who played essentially a platoon role.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to want to keep him along. Like you have all these depth pieces if you're Forge. So who do you, like, what positions do you think are in need? What changes do you think are necessary, assuming a lot of these players stick around?
Yeah, well, that's the main thing, right? We're talking about like guys like David Choinier. You can see that all the potential and the consistency that guy can bring in. I think he can take on a more important role if we talk about him personally next season in 2020. I think he's ready for that. I think that's what he needs also to take that further step in his career. So I think he's gonna strive and he's gonna also hard to get that, to prove that Smyrniotis can you know trust him and give him that sort of confidence of trust. Defensively speaking, it's something that maybe they need to improve a little more. When you see that the big difference in regular season with the Cavalry was the Calgary was very sound defensively, a lot more than Hamilton anyways. So for me, that's the main goal if I'm Bobby Smirnyard, is to strengthen maybe the back line a little bit, defensive midfield, and try not only, you know, via transfers or try to get new players, but, you know, to try to tweak a little bit also the tactical parameters of his defensive line. So I think that's the key element if I'm Bobby Smirnyard right now. If you want to repeat, if you want to be up there again in 2020, you need to have a better defensive display overall.
I think it's really hard to talk about an outlook for next season before we know the fate of Tristan Borges.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course. And I mean, as we record this, we don't know what's going to happen. We actually haven't heard a lot from Forge at all because I think they're probably still partying. But I know that from my Twitter mentions, at least, there's a lot of people in Montreal that are very interested in Tristan Borges. Have you?
Oh yeah.
Do you have any kind of a read on that front?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, no insider info on that end. But what I can tell you is that, yeah, the profile fits, right? Fits a need in Montreal. We need depth up front. We need that kind of quality. We need younger players. We need Canadian players as well. So, of course, the profile of Tristan Borges is very interesting. And as you mentioned, you know, it's very, very difficult to foresee what's coming up for Hamilton in 2020 without knowing if Tristan Borges is going to be part of that squad. You know, he was so central in their success in everything they did, not only scoring, but also passing, you know, creating offense, being a leader as well. He played almost 2,500 minutes in all competitions. So, I mean, he was their MVP. He was the league's MVP. And, of course, it's a player that will interest quite possibly the Montreal Impact. And you can bet some other MLS teams have an eye on him, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think this offseason is going to be really interesting because we have a very clear player of the year who can fill a void that has always been there in Canadian soccer. And he could potentially make a jump to MLS, and that would just set a precedent, right? That would set a precedent for the next big thing out of this league to make there. But the question is, well, do you think that Borges is MLS ready?
I mean...
Yeah. No, go ahead, please.
Oh, like, I think he totally could play in MLS if he wanted to next season, but should he? Is what I would wonder.
Yeah, right.
If he were to go to Montreal, like, would you rather be the star of Forge or would you want to be Nacho Piatti's understudy? Right?
I agree.
Yeah.
That's a great question because, I mean, of course, as a young player, you want to grow. You're always looking up and you want to, when you're in MLS, you look into Europe and so on. And it's normal. And that's a natural thing and that's a healthy thing. As for Borges, I don't know if it's the right timing to do so, right? Because you have one good season in CPL, which is great, a stellar season. If I was him or if I was his manager or his agent, I would say stay 1 year, one more season, confirm what you're doing. Take that experience, take that leadership experience as well that you may not get in MLS. You're not going to play 2,500 minutes or maybe that much if you jump to a top-tier MLS team. So, you know, it's a bit of a kind of a, you know, tricky situation for him. Of course, you have a bigger paycheck, you have a bigger, maybe better conditions and all that, you know, more professional, whatever, which is a big incentive, right? But at the same time, for a young player like that, having that role, playing so many minutes, I mean, for me, that's priceless. And if I was him, if I was in his entourage, I would tell him, stay one more season, do what you got to do, go get another championship, confirm that you are the real deal. And then, you do whatever you want. You can take on MLS and be great. But I agree that he's MLS ready today. But I don't know if he'll have the same impact, if he'll shine as much, if he'll play as much. And at the same time, if he wants to be in the Canadian national team, for me right now, the best option for him is still the Canadian Premier League for that.
We had an interesting conversation with Kyle Becker at the awards, and obviously Becker was nominated for Player of the Year as well alongside Borges, but he just said pretty bluntly, just saying, look, like, Borges was part of our leadership team. He was 20, and he was he was first in, first out, that all that kind of jazz, but he was a leader on the team, and you forgot that. You forgot watching him play that he was sometimes the youngest player on the pitch. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is premature, right? Because he is only 20, and maybe it's 22, 23 when you make that move.
We've seen young Canadian players try to take a step up too early and not go that. I mean, poor Kyle Aaron definitely went to Europe too early.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah, yeah, there are many players like that.
Yeah.
Looking ahead to 2020 here, Arcadia, what do you think is a tangible goal here for Forge? Do you think it's maybe moving on in a CONCACAF league? Do you think it's repeating or, you know, being competitive, maybe winning spring or fall? What do you see as kind of being a reasonable target for Smyrniotis?
Yeah, I think that Bobby Smyrniotis is going to set targets once the Borges deal or the situation is clear, is clearer at least. But because, I mean, he's such a it's hard to tell what's coming up for Forge, right, without knowing if Borges is coming back or not. But I think today, as with the squad they have and the success they proved in 2019, I think it's tangible to say they have what it takes to repeat. Even if Borges goes, we could even argue that team, you know, getting a few more players could still have that flair. And I think they can repeat. They should aim for that for sure. You have no choice, you know, when you're defending champion, that's what you need to do. And the CONCACAF experience for me as well, I think, was crucial in their success in building that team chemistry and building that character they've shown throughout the season and during the championship, the playoffs. So I think they will definitely try to thrive on that and try to repeat another great CONCACAF run, which would be an amazing thing for all the Canadian league and Canadian football in general.
And with that, we're now descending. So we've hit the summit. Yep. The way back down is not going to be an hour plus. It's just going to be a couple.
It's more
minutes.
Of a cliff than a slope.
That's right. Charlie and I are falling off a cliff right now. Seven conversations later, what's one or two points you could think of that we didn't really get to? There really was a lot to talk about, and I feel like 10 minutes each club wasn't really doing it justice.
Yeah, I think with Forge, there's so much to talk about. Mm-hmm. So the champions, I don't think we really got into quite enough how much they're going to value the CONCACAF League in this upcoming year. Because I think they probably were pretty disappointed with the way it ended and probably thought that they could have gone a lot farther in that competition. So I think they'll be pretty pumped to be back in it for next year, eh?
Yeah, and especially with the team that, like, you know, for everyone else, the goal is to finish first. If you finish first, there's another threshold. There's another way to go. We also really didn't talk about the Canadian Championship as well and potential expectations in that, because so we don't know what the format is going to be. Yeah. Obviously, without Ottawa Fury, it'll probably bring it down to about 12 clubs, we're assuming. But yeah, in terms of expectations of that moving forward, who knows? You know, would you say Calvary FC would try to be a semifinalist again?
I hope so.
Right? Like, you know, that's, again, that's totally valid. I mean,
they could just get a bye and be there anyway.
That's a good point, I guess. Yeah, since they, you know, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's I maybe just answered my own question.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out when the format comes out, eh?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess they technically, yeah, anyways, that's too confusing. We didn't really talk about, and it's obviously tough talking to reporters now because we don't know about player movement and who's coming and going, but Pacific FC, obviously the talking point is the young players and then sort of moving up, but we don't really know about who's coming and going.
I don't think there is much talk about a lot of guys coming in there because they've got this young core that I think they're clearly just kind of trying to let them drive.
Well, I don't know. You've got Staro, Henrik Struska. So he's out, right? Mm. You have Blake Smith. He's out as well. I think that Legault, as much as Legault didn't have a good year, I still think that that's another like depth piece at defense that who knows, like, you know, they're short a couple fullbacks. That's going to be a position
they definitely need defenders. They definitely could use some help on defense, especially with guys Wise going out. I mean, we'll see how Marcel de Jong fits in there.
Fair enough.
Which is a big piece, but...
And you're probably not going to play Matthew Baldissimo as a center back for long.
Ideally or
you'd prefer not to.
Ideally
he,
not.
He can. All right, so that just about wraps up another special episode of Center Circle Live.
It's another special one.
It's been a long day, but it's been a good episode. We'll be back next week to talk about some player transfers. Obviously, there's lots to talk about there, and conclude with a special message from Commissioner David Klanikin as well, a special interview that we'll have here on the podcast, and then we'll finish up with the quiz. Charlie, are you scared?
I'm terrified. Shaking.
Yeah, I'm doing the quiz, so I've got the questions all ready to go. I've been throwing them around the office to see how people do.
Marty's working really hard to try and make Armin and myself just look like huge fools. You don't have to work that hard for that, to be fair. But
guess how many multiple choice or true falses there are?
There better be a lot.
No, there's only two. So yeah, good luck. Actually, it's one each. So okay, we'll see you next week.
See ya.
So we're doing team by team. So like post-mortem.
What team did I get?
I think...